This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. By most measures, health outcomes in the Ohio Valley region are not very good. With many parts of Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia ranking near the bottom among states. But a team of health researchers found a few places within the region that seem to stand out as, quote, bright spots. Now, researchers want to know why these communities appear to fare better. Aaron Payne visited one potential bright spot, Wirt County, West Virginia.
Residents of West Virginia's smallest county give different answers when asked to describe their home.
It's tiny, it's rural.
I mean, we don't even have a stoplight.
There is here a very strong sense of community.
The people are friendly. They're helpful.
A group of organizations interested in Appalachian health think Wirt County could be a bright spot, with some health outcomes exceeding expectations. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Appalachian Regional Commission, and the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky want to know why that is. 2 years ago, they launched the Bright Spots Research Initiative to help create a culture of health in Appalachia. ARC Communications Director Wendy Wasserman says the ongoing project began with a collection of available data on how Appalachia is affected by certain public health issues.
The second part is to see where folks are performing better than expected based on these indicators.
Wirt appears to score better in categories including rates of depression and deaths due to injuries or poisoning. Now, field teams will visit to see if there's hard data to support a bright spot designation. Researchers meeting with health and community leaders in Wirt County are interested in programs that could contribute to positive outcomes. Take injuries, for example. West Virginia University's Extension Service offered a program in the county aimed at keeping children who work on family farms safe from injury.
It's called Youth Safe Farms.
Associate Dean of Programming and Research with the Extension Service, Cindy Fitch, says inspectors would teach the children how to identify dangers on the farm.
They were even able to go to the farms and identify and mitigate some of the hazards.
Fitch believes the young farmers will continue practicing safety for years to come. The Bright Spots research team is also interested in programs or organizations that may not be traditionally thought of as related to health, but contribute to community pride and social connections. Talk to Wirt County residents, and it won't be long before the Hope Shop comes up. The volunteers at the Hope Shop, like Elise Shepherd, view their main function as a food pantry, providing for about 60 families in need per month.
When they go out of here, they have a lot of groceries.
The staff is all volunteer, and area churches take care of supervision. Community donations also help. But Shepherd says the attached thrift store brings in most of the money to support their work.
And that's because we're selling clothing, all kinds of things, and we keep our prices very low. It's interesting that everybody shops at the Hope Shop.
The shop has the support of other local organizations as they routinely work together to meet the needs of the community. It's difficult to find an organization in Wirt County that does not work with other local organizations in some way. Shepherd has lived in different places during her life, and she says the community's ability to support one another sets it apart.
The thing that amazes me here is that they don't have a lot of resources, but they take care of each other.
The sense of community and collaboration isn't surprising. The latest county health rankings found social associations in Wirt County were higher than the national average in 2013. With research still in the works, the project's sponsors are not sure what they'll learn, and the project is far from completion. Researchers could have more concrete information early next year. If Wirt County is a bright spot, the hope is that its lessons will provide Appalachia a little more light. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne in Elizabeth, West Virginia.
West Virginia Morning host and state broadcasting icon Beth Voorhees retired on Friday last week. During her storied 32-year career, Beth either covered or guided coverage of every major newsworthy event in the state. Through it all, Beth's voice became synonymous with West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Dave Mistich sat down with Beth to reflect on her remarkable career and find out what's next.
So I'm sitting here with the woman that hired me 4.5 years ago.
You're very welcome.
Well, thank you, to say the least. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about your lack of a better way of putting it, illustrious career here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And I say that sincerely. I really do.
Thank you very much.
How did it all start?
It started in March 1984. I read an ad in the newspaper that a radio station was looking for someone to host an afternoon radio program. I called the number, and it was West Virginia Public Radio. I came in for an interview. I'd had experience in commercial television and radio, and was looking for a broadcasting job, and got hired for $10 a day to come in the afternoons and read a 15-minute newscast called Dateline West Virginia from 4:45 to 5. And so that's how I got my start at West Virginia Public Radio. It was a little later on that year that I was hired full-time as a reporter.
Right. And I know this because we've talked and I've known you for some time. Your, you know, education is in theater. So it seems like a bit of a jump from theater to journalism to some people, but those of us that are in this business may not necessarily see that.
It was good training for talking on the radio and for reading news. I also got great training. I owe my mother my broadcasting career because she used to say when I was a kid, speak distinctly. Don't slur your words. And I sound just like her when I say that. I have her voice. She had this kind of voice too. And so between that and, you know, being comfortable on stage, being comfortable just performing, yeah, it was good training for radio reporting and television news.
Right. And so whenever you started, I guess, paint the picture of March 1984, what West Virginia Public Broadcasting looked like and was back then. It's quite different now, I presume, after you know 33 years.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, we were known as West Virginia Public Radio.
Right.
There were three public TV stations, but we didn't have anything to do with them. We were West Virginia Public Radio. We had a small office in Building 5 at the Capitol Complex, right across the street from the Capitol and those high-rise buildings there. We had one big bullpen. One production studio, the on-air studio, lots of records. Like, remember the old
vinyl
records?
I know what those are.
Lined the hallways and all into the air studio. We had another bullpen where membership and development was. We shared the offices with the Educational Broadcasting Authority, and we had reel-to-reel tape recorders and electric typewriters and a wire machine, an AP wire machine, and big Marantz tape recorders, cassette tape recorders, that took six D-cell batteries. So you had to put the six D-cell batteries in the Marantz, lug that around, but you also had to have an extra six batteries. That was heavy-duty stuff. And your microphone, and you went out, and you covered the news, and you did interviews, and you covered news conferences, and the legislature, and state government, and feature stories, and you just went out, and you did the news. You produced the news.
Right. Cutting tape with a razor blade.
Cutting tape with a razor blade. Yeah.
Which, right.
Yeah, until we got newfangled reel-to-reel recorders, and we thought we had really made it, that had a little razor already on it. All you had to do was press the dot, and it would cut it for you. And we thought, oh, this is so cool.
Right.
This is so – we're really high-tech now.
And I mean, in thinking about it in the context of the way the news works, you know, they talk about the 24-hour news cycle, 24/7. And these days, I mean, it's a tweet that sparks something. It's it's, you know, it's rapid fire. Get it off, get it on the air, and get it out to the public via social media, full blast as soon as possible. That's a different. That's a completely different, you know, cycle of news back then. I mean, and rushing that out, that had to be completely different, right?
We relied on news releases. I relied on the Associated Press date book. They send out an advisory of kind of different events that were happening that week or that day. And I would just take that day book and just run with it. Just, okay, go here, go there, come back, produce a newscast, a 15-minute newscast at 4:45 in the afternoon. And that's what you did. That's how you did the news back then.
Right. And you'd mentioned, you know, covering the legislature and state government. Obviously, that's sort of become a cornerstone of what we do here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You know, these days, the legislature today with Ashton Mara, obviously, to say it's a cornerstone or a centerpiece of what we do is an understatement at best.
And looking back now on my career, that is what I'm most proud of.
That was going to be a question, but I guess you can go ahead and answer it.
That's what I'm most proud of, is the legislature today. Now, I took it over in 1994. It had been on the air 2 years prior, but it was called Legislative Update, and I thought that was such a boring title. So I retitled it The Legislature Today, because that's a phrase that you use in your copy at The Legislature Today. So that's how it got named The Legislature Today, and I produced and hosted that show for 20 years, and I'm very, very proud that it became must-see TV for those who work at the legislature, for those who are in the legislature, for the spouses of the lawmakers. They like to keep up with what's going on, and it really is a very popular program. Likewise, the Final Night broadcast. I did that for 15 years, again, starting in the session of 1994. And Dave, I got to tell you, before that broadcast started, you know, the half hour before you were supposed to go on the air, I would be sick to my stomach with nerves about how this thing is going to go. But once you get on the air at 8 o'clock, and once you start moving from the House to the Senate to an interview, back to the House, back to the Senate, it really was a very, very good broadcasting experience. And I'm very, very proud of that. And I'm very glad that it was brought back this session. I think it was very important to do, because it was important for lawmakers to see the cameras there, to see the lights, to see the set, to see West Virginia Public Broadcasting banners all over the place, to see Ashton Mara there at the Capitol resuming the Final Night broadcast. I thought it was so important to do that.
Right.
And it was great. And then the West Virginia channel, and now providing gavel-to-gavel coverage of the legislature. I enjoy it. I like watching it. But I think it's very valuable. It's very valuable.
What else comes to mind as coverage that you played a role in that was significant in delivering the news to West Virginians when it truly mattered outside of the legislature?
The very first big story was there was a chemical leak of methyl isocyanate in Bhopal, India, from a Union Carbide plant in December of 1984. I was full-time at public radio by then. And while the tragedy happened there, and thousands died and thousands more were injured from that chemical leak, the same chemical was being made at the Union Carbide plant in Institute, West Virginia, just down the road from Charleston. So that was my first experience in filing stories with NPR. Boy, we covered plant tours, community meetings, going door to door in the houses that are next to that plant, getting people's reaction to what's being made there. I thought it was a story that would go on forever. It finally did end, but I didn't know much about the chemical industry moving here from the Midwest and growing up in New England. I didn't know much about the chemical industry. So we got a real good lesson on what is being made here, how it's made, who is making it, and what kind of precautions they're taking in order to keep this chemical valley safe.
Right.
So that was the first big story that just kind of dropped into my lap. Nobody knew. Nobody knew that methyl isocyanate that leaked in Bhopal, India, was made here in the Kanawha Valley.
Right. As you wind down, do you sit at home and amongst all your antique radios and microphones, which I know you have in your home, which is, you know, do you sit around and look at that stuff and just what comes over you? I don't even know how to ask that question because it seems so big to me, you know?
I think I have to take some time and really think about what do I want to devote my time to now? What am I passionate about? What makes me joyous? What do I want to do now with my time? What kind of opportunities are out there? But I need some time to think about that and get out of the news realm and out of the early morning news reading realm and just kind of sit and listen to the quiet and listen to what it tells me to do.
And I want to end on this, and I know it's a very strange way of putting it. The one thing that has always impressed me about you, Beth, and I'm going to tear up a little bit as I say this, is that you have been able to do this with such grace, without ego. And maybe there is always a little bit of ego involved in this. But I think you've been able to do it in such a way that is not only inspiring to people in this business, mm-hmm. but people that turn you on in the mornings and get to listen to you.
Well, thank you.